Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's happening? I'm Braden Flynn, photographer and fellow film shooter, and started Film Supply Club as a way to support the film shooting community to save us all money on film and other photo-related products and gear. The way it works, basically, is there's a small monthly membership fee, and then as a member, you get as close to wholesale pricing as we can get it, saving you a ton of money throughout the year. As a listener to Analog Talk Podcast, we're offering a $20 gift card to use in the shop if you sign up for a membership at an annual level. So go to filmsupply.club/analog or just go to filmsupply.club to visit the shop. So hope to have you in the club.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's guest, we have George from Negative Feedback. Hey, George.
Hello. Hello.
Thanks for joining us. So before we get into all the things we'd like to pick your brain about, can you give our listeners a background on yourself and how you got started in photography?
Sure. I guess I've been it's like a big thing into one.
Mm-hmm.
I got interested in photography when I was really young, I guess. I think I bought my first camera when I was like 11.
Wow.
And I was just like taking horrible photos of my friends. There was no purpose to anything until mm-hmm. a lot later. But I guess my first like real interest or the first like proper spark of photography was when I was 14. In the UK, you do work experience with school. And I spent 2 weeks at a photography studio who did lifestyle portraits and weddings and events. And we got on really well and we work together from like when I was 14 to I guess like 20. Just like any time I had when I wasn't studying, I'd go and like assist him and
help on shoots.
Yeah, that's great.
But I knew pretty soon after I got into that I did not want to do weddings. Like I just did not enjoy that.
Yeah.
And
same.
But it was like really cool to learn how a business of photography works. And then from that I went to study video. So at college, not university, college, I did a 2-year course on video production, which like I'd always kind of like done photo and video simultaneously and kind of swung between which one I'd prefer to do in the long run. But they go quite hand in hand. So for that period of time, I was like juggling both. And then I went to university, dropped out in like a month for video. Well, it was like a very similar course to the course I did at college. Like
right.
One of the first lectures went over camera angles and I was just like, I can't do this again.
Right.
I understand what a long shot is and what a mid shot is.
Yeah. Right.
So I ended up dropping out and becoming freelance and I just did like video stuff mainly. Photos like on the side, but I didn't really get paid very much for anything. It was mainly video. I had a job where I was interviewing sports personalities. That was somewhat interesting. About 2 years after that, or 2 years into that, I started making YouTube videos about film photography. Then I don't know how long it's been, and here I am now.
I was gonna say the film production. When you said that, I was like, "Oh, that makes so much sense." Because the stuff on your channel is so well done.
Yeah. So yeah, I was into all of that, and like I had a lot of friends that made YouTube videos. So that was like an obvious thing to me to do at the time.
So did you have, when you got started, did you have a plan for it in your mind off the bat, or is it like a slow
it was like quite a weird start actually. Like the very first inception of the whole of Negative Feedback was I just thought of the name one day and I saw that the domain was free, so I bought that and kind of said, oh, I'll figure out what this should be later. That's a really good name for something to do with film. And
for
pretty
sure.
soon after, I decided that I should make it was like a blog which I did on Medium, and it was just going to be photos of every roll of film, like sample photos. Like, I remember at the time when I was getting into film, I'd like look on Flickr in all the groups of like, oh, this is what Kodak looks like, this is what Fuji looks like. And I was just trying to learn all of that. And as someone who at the time I think was like 20, there, like, being a very internet person, there wasn't great resources. Like, I never studied photography, and I wanted, like, I learn everything through videos and stuff like that. I've been like very self proactive, I guess, in like learning how to edit. I did that through YouTube tutorials. So I wanted like the similar thing, but for film photography, which is what I was really interested in. So I started off making these just like written reviews of what to expect. But then one day I was like, wait, I should just make videos. Like, that makes so much more sense considering I know how to do that. And we made one video which never went live.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we just like rushed into it, and I wasn't very happy with how it came out. And
I was just going to ask that if you had some like lost negative feedback episodes that never made the cut.
There's been like three in all of time, which is pretty good.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, that is good.
But yeah, the first one never came out. It wasn't like a... It was essentially the same thing as the first proper episode, but it just wasn't quite like filmed how I imagined it. So I kind of forgot about it for a while. And then it was like this really weird series of events where someone who I was working with on some projects at the time got a call from this like very high up an ad agency guy who was interested on doing this campaign on something to do with photography and mental health, and how there was a study that had proved that picking up photography improves your mental health. I don't know exactly it was, but he was like, we should shoot the pilot episode and send it to this agency because I think we can make something with them. They'd be really cool. The same, like 2 days later, we shot the first actual episode, and we just like, we edited it. And then the day after we uploaded it, and like, then I was like, okay, guess I better make one for next week.
Yeah.
So, like, there wasn't like a plan. It was just,
yeah,
okay, this is happening now.
It's crazy how blogs like BLOG used to be so... I mean, I would go to so many different photography blogs all the time, and now I couldn't even tell you the last time I actually like went to a blog site and read something. I mean, other than when Petapixel put something out about Kodak being sold and dying and stuff like that, I kind of I jumped over and read that real quick. But I love that that video is kind of... I mean, it's so much easier to sit down and watch something rather than to... I mean, that sounds so lazy of me and so... Like, I don't know. I think you came at the right time, too.
Yeah, it's an obvious evolution to me that with video being more accessible to more people, that it's more enjoyable to consume as a audience member. So
yeah,
I guess it kind of made sense over time.
So do you freelance still with video, or are you like full time on your YouTube channel? Or,
well, yeah, I haven't done anything for like 2 years apart from this. Maybe a bit less than that. But like, I stopped taking video jobs like 2 years ago. But I'd still do like the occasional photography thing. But in the like last actual year, I did absolutely nothing other than this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm really fortunate. I always remember when I was like getting into all of this, one of my friends would always tell me like about saying no to jobs. Like, you don't have to take everything. And like, when you be able to start saying no to things, that's like the most powerful position.
Yeah.
Because like, you no longer do you become just like fitting the mold that someone else wants. They have to come to you for you, not to like fill a gap.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's like, that's happened now. That's great. Like, for years I was like, well, I can't say no, I don't have any money, and I need to do this.
Right. I was gonna say, I've done like so many like events, because you have to, and you know, getting burnt out and not feeling inspired, and like, but it's like, what are you supposed to do? You know, it's like, yeah, that catch 22 is like, I want to be a professional photographer, so I'm going to take everything. Yeah. And I'm sort of in that position now where I can say like no to things, and it's like you said, super empowering. And part of the whole, I mean, creating your brand and like the type of your work, you do the work you want to do, which we've talked about on the show a million times, but yeah, I can relate to that.
So actually, it's not my New Year's resolution by any means. I have zero of them. But I made like a mental note like 2 months ago that I was going to start doing photography commissions. Like, I'd always like had it like, yeah, I'll do this. And like, I'd wait for only like the things that I really, really wanted to do. But I decided that, yeah, from now on, I'm going to take a lot more on because I want to make some examples of things which I don't currently have and then use them to get even better things in the future. Yeah. I just think like without having done some things like that in a while, it's interesting to go back and try it with new knowledge, which I've had from like making personal work in the last year.
Oh yeah, that's true.
See, I feel like it's so easy to get pigeonholed on like, you know, take you just said, Chris, like taking every job that you could to be in photography, yeah. You know, like just to do it. But, you know, you don't, well, I don't know, maybe you do want to shoot weddings and stuff like that, but that's like not the kind of work I want to do. And I feel like you get kind of labeled as a wedding photographer if you're shooting weddings and stuff like that all the time. So I guess, I don't know. That's such like a, see, I come strictly for like personal work. Like I don't really ever do any sort of paid work anymore, minus like selling a book or a print or something like that. That's kind of how I make any sort of money off of that. So I don't know what that's like. So it's kind of interesting to hear.
Yeah.
I think there's a greater, I don't know, matter of problem or like, it's not a problem. But to me, more so than being pigeonholed as a photographer, the thing that I was stuck on for a while was like, am I a YouTuber or am I a photographer? And which one would I rather be? And for a long time, I was like focusing on trying to make the work that would shift me from doing this to being more art-centric. And how like, basically when I started the channel, I was really interested in gear. And now I really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I just grew up a lot and I'm interested in just good things, not necessarily just what film is. And trying to do that as my own person, not just a channel as well, was like the thing I was stuck on. And I think for a while I was like figuring out how to do that. And then recently I was just like, well, why does it have to be one or the other? Like, why can't I just focus on this as a channel, make all the things and worry about myself separately? Like they're two entities. They don't have to be one or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you ever shoot personal work for yourself without sharing it to the channel?
Yeah. Like, that's good. That's what I was doing. And I was waiting to like finish it. And then I'd be like, look, this is what I've done, and gain the interest from the people who watch the videos. But I had this like, basically, because I wanted to be interested in like the more art world, traditional publishing and things like that, and gallery side of things. They basically like the way the law is set is that you don't show anyone any work until it's done. You come out, you release a book, you release an exhibition or whatever the end result is. And like, it has to be brand new. If like, that's the biggest selling point to them is that like, we'll sell more books if they haven't seen it before. That's like the way they think. And I think the next or the current thing, which I'm working on, I haven't shared it yet with my videos, but my plan is to not do that because I think that the landscape's completely changed. And if I'm able to share the journey that I go on and bring people along the way, they'll feel way more attached to the work. Like they had like some sort of input and then want to buy a book or come to the exhibition because they feel like they're a part of the journey.
Yes.
As opposed to just being like, hey, here's this thing which you have no idea about. Please buy it.
I really like that concept because that to me, like what you said, feeling a part of it, that's the main thing I think that people will want to get it is because they're like, I remember this when he went there and like, this is how he shot that. And like, now I have it on my coffee table. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Yeah. It's and like, really if there's a comment that's like, oh, you should go check out this place or like a suggestion of like a town to go and visit. And then you end up making a photo that it's like, it's almost like a collaborative project, I guess. But yeah,
oh, yeah.
It's just interesting.
That's crazy. Yeah. See, I always struggled with like the little bit of YouTube stuff that I dabbled in that I kind of what you were just talking about. It's like, do you do it for YouTube or do you do it for yourself kind of thing? And like, I would get so stuck on what I thought people wanted to see from me on my channel that my photography turned into that. And I really, you know, lost sight of what I loved about. So I wasn't only just resenting YouTube, I was resenting my photography as well. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a catch 20. I mean, that's why I haven't made a video in 10 months. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it got so overwhelming that I kind of started to hate my work. And that's the last thing I wanted to do. Because just like you said a couple minutes ago, you were doing something that involved mental health and photography and how it helps it. You know, like, I totally use photography as a medicine. So I didn't want to corrupt that. So I had to choose. But now I feel like I'm at a point where I can definitely kind of juggle both. I just wish I had somebody to film me so I didn't have to worry about all that part, because that part's so
That's why it's hard to do what I'm planning to do of the shooting the main personal project, because I really, if I just focus on the photos, I know the photos will be better. If I have to worry about video too, it's it's an extra thing which I don't want to have to juggle. But
yeah,
it's a balancing act. But when you were saying making photos for YouTube, or with the purpose of the videos being on YouTube, I've always had this I know that the photos that I make for YouTube, I don't like them. That's just if I have to make or try to make, I know that I don't most of the time, make a video every week. I don't make good photos every week. That's just unrealistic expectations. So as a compromise, you put out all these things which you don't really care about. And some people love them. Some people hate them because they're like, oh, you could have done this. I don't like these photos. Maybe you should do this. And yeah, I think it just got to a point where I was like, actually, I'm serving a purpose of these photos as an example, not as, hey, here's the best photos in the world. So when you, I know the worst ones are when you see a new digital camera comes out and they make a video about just the sample video. I've never seen one that's anywhere near good.
Yeah.
Why aren't they good? I don't know. But what I'm trying to do with the videos is this is what to expect from this item.
Right.
I'm not saying this is my best thing. And the worst thing is me then being well, I wish I could take the time to show them the things I could do. So I think that's why I'm interested in shooting commissions now and all these other things, because I know that with my own time and resources, I can make something so much better and that I'm more proud of showing.
Now with the commission work, are you going to do videos on that, or is that just strictly kind of a personal thing?
I don't know. I'm having I've got a shoot on Tuesday for a brand, and they're not in the past, I've had an opportunity to shoot, say a lookbook or something for a brand, and you kind of tie it together as this nice, oh, well, I can make a video about it too, and that's extra advertising for you, and then they'll pay me for that video. That's great. That's the ideal situation. But if they're not able to pay me, do you still include it in a video? Because you're giving them something else, which then you don't want to lose the value of that because you want to charge some people for it. So I'm not sure, because I started making these weekly videos, which are more a diary of what I'm up to. And I'm well, I would love to say this week I've been shooting for this brand and here are the images I made and this is why I did it. I think at the moment I'm sitting on, I should actually just show it because it's portraying me, it's advertising my work, and then someone who watches that might work for something else and they'll be like, oh, right, why can't you do this? But it's a hard decision.
That is a hard decision. Yeah, agreed.
It's kind of almost doing taking a job for little to no money because of who it's for, or exposure. Have you shot the celebrity, it's great, but
we'll give you an Instagram shout out. It'll be great.
Rough. I was just gonna kind of off track, but have you always shot film? I know I saw the video with your little point and shoot digital camera, but
yeah,
how has your journey been with actual photography?
The first camera I got after that tiny thing was a Canon 600D, I think. I had that for a few years. No, I had a Nikon D3100. That was the first one. I had that one for a few years. Then I got the 600D when I went on holiday to America because it was cheaper than buying it at home. And then I had that for a bit, and I was working for the photography studio, which I said before. He was the first person to get a 5D Mark III in the country. He had two a month before release.
I remember when those came out.
And he didn't like them in the end. He was a strictly 1D user. And he ended up selling me one of them for a mega cheap price. So I used that from when I was 18 to 20, I guess. And then I had bought a Sony A7S instead because that was good for video. And I bought my first film camera when I went to university for the 1 month, because I was staying in a classic halls. And I was I should make some photos to put on the wall. The classic cliche student snapshots on the wall. So I bought a Canon FTB on eBay for £11, and shot like 5 rolls of film of just like my friends, and then left it in a box. And I was interested in film, but like I'd only ever had it scanned at like the worst lab possible. Like I had no idea of like what things could be like. I treated it more as like a toy and some fun, like a disposable camera to someone who's like not interested in photography. And then when I was started working like I guess it was full time as freelance. I had this like proper job for 6 months doing video, and I was earning money for the first time in my life, like full time. And I was like, I spend money on nothing. I'm going to buy like all of the nicest cameras in no time. And I bought a Leica M6 and a Contax T2.
Yeah.
Damn, that's the way to do it.
No, but the funny thing was that I bought the Contax. No, wait. No, this was later. I bought a Yashica T4 first.
Yes.
I shot that for a while. And then I was like, okay, I really like film now. This is really fun. I want to like buy something nicer. Not that that wasn't nice. Just like I was interested in like trying everything. At the time, that was like £100. It was like before everything got expensive. And I found a T2 on eBay from like a first time seller. And it was like £150 I paid.
Oh, I was going to say, oh, my goodness. My heart.
And it was the golden one as well. It was like ultimate bling. There was like one tiny dent in it. It was like no problems. But I bought it and the guy never shipped it. And it had been like 2 weeks. And like he wasn't refunding me as well. And I was just like, I don't know what to do here. So I got paid again. And I was like, okay, I'm going to buy a Leica instead. So I bought an M6. And the day the M6 arrived, the T2 also arrived.
Oh my goodness.
Best and it
was
day
like,
ever.
Well, yeah, but I was like, I need to send one of these back. I can't do this.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I like held both, I was like, no, I need to keep both of these. What can I do to keep both? I made that happen. And then a few months later, I bought a Hasselblad when I wanted to get interested in medium format. It was like, that was a roller coaster.
Yeah. Do you still have them all? You didn't sell any, right?
No, none of them. Yeah.
Dang.
Like when I was making videos at first, I had to like recycle cameras. Like I don't have loads of money to just be like collect them.
Right.
I had to sell one and buy another one to make like a different video. So yeah, none of them are with me anymore. But I'm not.
R.I.P.
I don't mind. It would have been nice to sell the Contax at the peak, but that's okay.
Oh yeah.
Was that the black Contax?
No, it was the gold one. I sold it for like $350. And then, a month later, they were up to, like, 700. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing the gold T2 in the videos back in the day.
Yeah. It served me
well. It's funny. Yeah, yeah. We were just talking before you hopped on that about, you know, title, like, YouTube content for film photography. It's kind of a niche market, you know? And you've definitely kind of, like, blew out of that bubble. You know, you're definitely, the negative feedback channel has really grown. With,
like more mainstream.
You know, yeah, more mainstream than, you know, say like the smaller film community channels. And somebody had just posted a video and it was like more of a theory-based video rather than a gear video. And everyone was like applauding said person for doing like a theory video instead of, you know, showing another film camera. And it's just tough. Like when you're trying to grow a channel on YouTube, like you have to do gear because it's the only searchable content you can really do, you know? And I kind of like, especially now since your channel's like transitioned, you know, you went from like a gear heavy channel, like doing a new camera or a new film stock, like each week to kind of your in conversation videos. And, you know, I like the weekly diary because I tried to do stuff like that with my channel too. I was doing like what I did in a day or a week or something like that of photography because, you know, like you said, not every day you're shooting something special or, you know, you're not, you know, some days you don't even do anything photography related. At least I know I do, you know, and like it's pretty cool to see how your channel's transitioned from like a gear centric. Do you still feel like you get the same response with your videos as you did?
I think people definitely want gear videos. They would still be more popular, but
yeah,
I don't really care, I guess.
I love that.
But I think there was like a shift a few months ago when I said about like the photographer that does YouTube or YouTube that does photography. That's when I thought about being less uptight about not wanting to do gear. I was like, well, this doesn't like tie me as a person into liking this. Maybe some people think that from the outside, but like I can just do this because it will be successful. And like if that's actually my job, I don't care. Other people might care from the outside, but like I need this to get views. I need this to like do what it has to do, and I don't mind. Sure, I'll do a. I'm gonna film a review tomorrow, actually. So they're coming back, but like they're gonna not be much. And like I would much rather promote going to galleries and doing like things which will keep the parts of photography that I enjoy alive to the next generation than talking about why this camera is good and why you need it, because if you buy it, realistically, you're not going to get any better. Like, you're just going to have a slightly different camera.
That's so true.
That's such like a misconception too. Like, a lot of people think, especially when you're first starting off, that you need a Leica M6 to take classic 35 black and white millimeter photos. You know what I mean? Like, it gear really doesn't matter, man. You can take a crappy, you know, $2 point and shoot and get some amazing photographs that actually have feeling and grit to them.
True.
I mean, I've shot expensive cameras and I mean, the outcome's pretty much the same. You know, the glass might be a little bit better and you might get a sharper image or something like that, but
yeah, man, they're just all black boxes at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Collecting light.
Are you working on any, like books or anything at the moment, George, like zine type stuff?
No. Well, yes and no. Yeah, I'm like working on a series of images, which, I mean, the last series of images which I made, I thought I wanted to be my first book. But I ended up, I was thinking the only way to like do the analogy is that it was like releasing an EP before the album. And I was like, I'd much rather come out with the hit album first. Than Here's like something in 5 years I'm going to regret a bit. And I wish I just like waited for the next thing. So, the thing I'm working on at the moment, I'm like, well, I hope this is the album. But at the same time, it might get to the end and not be good enough. But yeah, I'm working on something. I've got an exhibition in the summer for it. So I'm...
Oh, congrats.
I'm That's working exciting. On finishing it for that, but I might keep doing it in terms of actually like printing it. So it's like, yeah, nice. I'm doing it. And like, this is what I'm planning on doing, those videos where I said about bringing people along. So... it's not like a secret, and like the work in progress is already on my website, so like I'm not hiding it, but I haven't like mentioned it yet.
Cool.
Is it all 8x10 or is it?
Yes. There's one. Oh no, there's like a few photos which aren't, but like the intended purpose is 8x10.
I still need to get my hands on one. Every time you share some of your work on the channel of the 8x10 and other 8x10, like large format photographers, I shoot 4.5, but there's just something about 8x10 that looks unreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, I got into it pretty quickly after I got into 4.5, and it was like, I was just at my friend, well, I say my friend's house, my friend's Airbnb at the time, and he'd just been to his storage unit, and he'd picked out his Toyo 8x10, and like, we'd been playing around on 4x5s for a little bit. I didn't actually own one yet, and it was even a dark room. It wasn't like great conditions, but the first time I looked through the 8x10 ground glass instead of 4x5, I was just like, okay, this is so much better.
Like, oh, wow.
I just like instantly knew this, like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I think, to me at least, I don't know if everyone notices, but like anytime I look at a great photographer's work who shot 8x10, it's like that's just like the work I gravitate towards. It's not because of the subject matter or these things. Like, there's just like, it has a look and a feeling, and as much as like I don't like gear, it's like, no, but this is like a separate entity. You can't replicate that look.
It really is.
That just makes me think of that photographer. I can't think of the name of the photographer at the moment, but the one who did all the celebrities like with no makeup with 8x10.
I don't think I've seen it.
I'll have to post it on our Instagram.
I've seen that either.
They're incredible. But yeah, there's definitely a different look with the 8x10 for sure.
And it's just like a pleasure to use as well. Like, it's just fun.
I've never used one.
It's fun until you have to carry it.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely bigger than me, I'm sure.
Man. That and like film costs, it's got to be up there with the price of film for that too.
It's ridiculous. but like I haven't bought any in quite a long time. So I had an eBay guy for a bit, and he kept uploading some for like a really, really cheap price. Like a brand new box of Portra at the time was like £220 for 10 photos, which is insane.
Wow. Yeah.
I can't afford that. Like I bought them fresh. I bought 3 boxes fresh ever. And that was because I was shooting a commission and like they paid for it. But like it came out of my bank account, but like they paid me for it. that's the only time. All of the rest is like expired off eBay. And I had this one guy who like was selling me a box like £80 at a time. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like I bought one. It's 400 NC, expired in 2007. And I was like, well, I'll test it out, see what it's like. And if it's good, I'll buy whatever else he uploads.
Yeah.
And it came out perfectly. And I remember just like I'd email him like every week being like, hey, look, if you have more, I'll buy everything you have like right now. Like, I knew this was the only way I could afford to shoot color. And like I want to make something impactful with color 8x10 before it's gone. I'm like, I don't think 35mm film is going to die anytime soon, but 8x10, it might. Like black and white will stay around, but color is on the way out.
And it's so sad.
Yeah, I ended up after like a year convincing him to sell me like 10 boxes, which was like horribly expensive.
Yeah.
But I haven't bought film in like a year now. So it's like it's worked out and I've still got like 60 sheets left. And that's what I'm intending to shoot the rest of this series with. And when that's gone, it's gone. Great. I'm going to shoot black and white.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's good that you have an intention with that, because when I buy stuff that's like a limited run of film or whatever, I like the Lomography F2 400 film. Mm-hmm. I like love that stock, so I bought a bunch, but I haven't shot it because I'm like I don't want it to go, like I don't want to shoot it, you know, because I don't want to run out.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, you know, it's good you have the intention, like this is going to be for this project, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it stays in your fridge like my whole stack.
Yeah. I mean, like I've struggled, like when I'm taking portraits of people which aren't to do with this series. Like I've shot portraits of 2 different people, well, 3. One was a couple, like, or yeah, 4. I've done 3 like portrait shoots on 8x10 in the last however long, separate to like the actual series work I'm doing, and choosing how much black and white or how much color to shoot was like such a hard experience. So I think the black and white film I bought was on discount at the time. It had like a crack in the box or something. It was fine, but like it was like a slightly damaged box, and some people would be really scared about that with sheet film. And I think it works out to like £1 or 50p per sheet, which is like really quite affordable for 8x10. It might be £1 or £2. Either way, it's like negligible in comparison to £20. So and I also bought that box of film 2 years ago and like just don't use it. So I was like, I can afford to shoot as much black and white as I want, but any color photos I take are color photos I can't take for this series I want to take photos with. And I was like, two of the shoots, I did 2 sheets of color, 2 sheets of black and white. And one, I was like, no, you're only having black and white. It's like, I kind of like load both. And it's like, if you know it's going to be good and like you want the color, you bring it out. But like, it really is a limitation.
Dang. Yeah, because every time you press the button, you're like, money's gone.
You have to try not to think about it, but like at the same time it's like a good limitation to have because it stops you taking the bad photos.
That's
but true. At the same time, I think it's like the series I made before this one that I talked about, like wanting that to be the great thing that I made, and it on reflection isn't. If I didn't make that, I wouldn't be able to make the thing I'm making now. And sure, I spent, I don't know how many sheets I shot, maybe like 40 sheets. That's like a lot of money, but that's like, I've learned so much through the process of that. Sure, it could have been black and white and I spent less, but I still learned a lot about color theory and like how to edit the scans I'm getting and just like all these different things, which without any of that, I wouldn't be able to take any of the photos I'm taking right now. So it's like an investment.
True.
Man, yeah, that's a great way to look at it too, because every time I kind of just went through a similar situation where I was thought I was shooting my next book or zine or whatever, and when I was finished I was very unhappy with the results, but some of those results kind of branched into a whole new idea that I've kind of been working on now. It's I love that. It's almost like a school, but you know, it's you and the film and the camera is teaching, you're all teaching each other kind of thing. And man, I didn't even think about 8x10 not being around. That you said that just like broke my heart a little bit. Yeah. Now that you said that,
I mean,
it didn't even cross my mind.
It's still being made right now, but
yeah.
It's just like I don't think people are gonna buy it if it gets much more expensive,
mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm.
So like,
so true.
And like all the people which were shooting it have already bought an Alpa or a stupid 100 megapixel Hasselblad. Like they're the kind of people right. that yeah. get paid that much. So right. they're like, I'm not paying this much anymore. I'm just going to shoot this instead. So it's like, it's already become rare to shoot it and people are getting priced out. So right. I think black and white will stay. I'm not worried about that. And actually, I've already like said to myself that after this series, I want to shoot black and white anyway. So
yeah.
I'm not too bothered, but it's like definitely a shame. I'm going to try mm-hmm. and buy some more for cheap if I can. And just like keep it forever.
Yeah, you need to keep your eyes open for the next deal coming around, just so you well, have
I
mean, it.
Like, I have 5 sheets of slide film for it, which I got nice. Sent ages ago, and I just like I just don't know what to use it on.
Like, yeah, just,
yeah.
It came in a box that wasn't the box that like the film is. I can't even remember what film it is anymore. That's like now the risk which I'm playing with.
Yeah.
But, oh, jeez.
It's just like. I know that I've only looked at 8x10 slides like twice, and it's like glorious. It's like such a crazy experience. And I just know I want to make something really cool with this, but I don't know what it is. And I'm sure one day I'll just be like, no, this is the time I use it. But for now,
it'll come to you. The project will come to you.
A project of 5 photos.
Yeah. It'll be a nice little series. Mm-hmm. It reminds me when Ben Horn, he gets his scans from where does he go? Like Utah or something like that, or Colorado?
Yeah.
I forget where he goes. And he flips through just seeing, because, I mean, it's a transparency, you know, mm-hmm. it's a positive. And it's just, I mean, even shooting slide film on 35mm, it's like, oh, that's so awesome when you see it, you know? It's just, I don't know, man. Just to see it in 8x10, that'd be insane.
Crazy. The only problem to me is, like, there's no actual benefit to it. Like, I think it's like a cool thing, and like I like looking at it, but then it goes in a drawer and I live with the scan.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, if you did a show and like they were all like hung on the wall, little light boxes, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
I've seen it done once, I think, where they had prints with light boxes of the negatives underneath, but that's not the kind of photography I'm interested in,
right?
And like I think it's really cool, but that's like such a landscape photographer thing.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like necessarily a bad way. That's just like not what I'm into.
Right.
And I don't want to ever put borders of my film in my photos and stuff like that. Like I just want I don't even want people to know that I shot this on portrait. I just want them to look at the images and judge that. So like having the negatives there, that's like it's only like distracting you from the stuff I want you to pay attention to.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, it depends on your audience, I guess, because, like, if you have it in a gallery and people come look at it, the normal person's not going to be like, I wonder what film type this is. But, like, us film nerds are going to be like, I bet I could tell. Like, I think it was portrait, you know?
Yeah, I've been talking about it as well recently about photography for photographers or photography for, like, the general public. And I don't know what I want to do in terms of that. Like, I'm aware that like the majority of people that buy photo books are people that are like already photographers who are like supporting like photo books still existing, and like that's really lame on one part that like there's no market to this outside of like the other people who make these, and it's like the transition, like should I be trying to make stuff that the general public would also appreciate, or should I try and make this like niche thing which I get like special bonus points from people who think like me.
Yeah.
Man, I was just thinking about this. That's so crazy that you're talking about it right now.
Yeah. I decided for the series I'm working on now that I was going to take some picturesque photos. Some photos which are like, actually, no, some normal person would hang this on their wall still, not some photography lover. And I think that's like a good way to think about it. Or like just like have a, I have like a list of like mental things to think about whilst I'm preparing photos now, because like when you're looking at the ground glass and it's upside down or back to front, like I have to remind myself certain things.
Yeah.
Not to put too much foreground in. And now to think about making it look pretty. Or just like all these like extra things. Like I went through a long period of time of hating shallow depth of field. Like I just think it's such a cop out. It's like such a, it makes it look good to someone who doesn't know about photography.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
And like I had this obsession with trying to like, it's easy to make something look good when the background's blurry because you don't have to worry about the background.
Yeah, what's in the
background. But when you have to compose an image which has like everything in focus, that's like the next level of skill and artistry. So like I had this phase where I was like, everything has to be in focus and perfect. And then like a month ago, I was like, actually, no, let's shoot everything wide open and have these dreamy 8x10 shots. So like I'm just like trying to mix it up and realize like what I do and don't do and like learn about what I can do.
I love that. It's also like, you know, figuring out your style too, you know?
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it.
When I say like I think it's a cop out to shoot wide open and things like that, I just mean personally, like of course it's like it's a great thing and it's a look, but it's not my look.
Right.
I started doing that too with just like when I take my laps around town down here, when I just shoot like, you know, little street photography stuff, I started shooting, you know, F-16 zoned down. So it's everything's in focus, you know, from a certain, because it really makes you work for an image. Because I used to shoot it, you know, 2.8 and get that one guy doing something.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to get that guy doing something with the kid in the background pushing the stroller and the car, you know, like it really, I don't know. It's the only way you kind of grow is if you start to shoot like that a little bit, you know, or just to try to do different things in general too. I mean, you can easily get stubborn in your ways of shooting, just like how you said that, you know, it was like, I'll never shoot, you know, a wide open shot again. And then you're like, oh wait, that does look really.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save